General Tony Zinni is joining me now. He's a retired four-star Marine general who was the commander-in-chief of CENTCOM and a special envoy to the Middle East. He's got a new book out now called Leading the Charge, Leadership Lessons from the Battlefield to the Boardroom. General, welcome to the Big 550 KTRS.
Thank you, Paul. Good to be with you.
Hey, before we talk about the leadership ideas you have in the book here, I want to talk to you a little war talk, if you don't mind.
Okay, sure.
There's a lot of people now calling for us to get out of Afghanistan and get out of Iraq. George Will, the conservative commentator, has written another column in that regard today. The White House has come under attack both from the right and the left for the way we're handling things, and a lot of push now from a lot of people to just abandon the effort and get out of there. What do you say?
Well, I think there's reasons we shouldn't, but I think it's clear that the president has to explain more clearly to the American people why we're there, what we intend to do, and what our plan is. I think that's what people want to hear. We have two nuclear powers there, one that may not be quite stable. We have Al-Qaeda, who, if the pressure's off, will begin to attack us again, I believe. And the Taliban, that we've seen the things they've done to women and their own people, and the ability to spread that beyond their own borders into Pakistan and elsewhere. And I think it's not just a U.S. problem. It's an international problem. We need more from NATO and the rest of the world in dealing with this. It shouldn't be just ours.
You were one of the people who was in the forefront of predicting the dangers of terrorism coming out of Afghanistan before 9/11. Next week, we're going to celebrate the 8th anniversary of that horrible day. You see those problems reforming in Afghanistan now?
Well, I think they have to be dealt with there. If we take the pressure in Afghanistan and Pakistan, it's going to spread, and they're going to feel free, as they did before, to use those bases as sanctuary, and from there plan, attack, and spread, and network out. I think we lost 8 years. We were distracted in Iraq, and we didn't take that time we needed to build the Afghan security forces, the Afghan government, and now we're paying a price for that.
George Will, in his column, says that if there's a worse use of the U.S. military than nation building, it is adult supervision and behavior modification of other people's politicians. I think he's probably talking about not only the leaders that are taking over in Iraq now, but particularly in Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai, whose government has been accused of all sorts of corruption. Do you think that we can have somebody there propped up by the U.S. government who can ever succeed?
I don't think, by definition, anybody we prop up is going to work. We've got to at least create the environment where someone who the people respect and can deliver an honest, fair, open, transparent form of governance that we can help. I mean, this is a problem going back to Vietnam. If you remember the rotating generals that had about a coup a month, I remember in Saigon, and we were there, you know, with the people asking them to fight and die for a government that wasn't responsive. And we can't win unless those governments really learn how to govern and have responsible people at the helm. And that ought to be the price of our involvement there in supporting them.
Yeah. In the meantime, I worry about the men and women in uniform who are there, who are trying to do the job that we've asked them to do. And we're doing it for guys who we can't fully support.
That's right. I mean, I think, we have to be the ones that ensure that if it's going to be our treasure and blood, I have a son in the Marine Corps who's been there and is going back. We got to make sure that the people on the ground are at least performing to a way that we expect and their own people deserve.
General, there's been talk in the last couple of days, ever since a report from the Project on Government Oversight, about these private contractors who engaged in lewd and deviant behavior while guarding the American embassy in Kabul. I'm curious, as a career soldier, a man who wore the uniform of the United States, what you think of these guys who are the private contractors who are making up kind of an invisible force that is almost equal to our soldiers and Marines over there.
I've seen that from both sides, and I really think that the whole business of contracting needs review, congressional review. We have to decide what it is we will contract. Some things make sense, logistics, maintenance, and things like that, where probably a taxpayer gets a good deal and the quality is there. Other things like this kind of security, I think we need to come down on the side that these need to be provided by government or military forces, and are inappropriate for outsourcing like this, because we run into these problems, and that whole business has just not proved to be a successful way to deal with this requirement.
Do we end up depleting our own forces because people are jumping into the private sector where there's more money?
No, I don't. You know, I don't think that's the case. Well, many times you in fact see retired military. You know, we have a retirement system that after 20 years or so, you're out. And think about that. That's late 30s, early 40s for a lot of great young people. And I've been involved with companies that hire them, and you're hiring senior NCOs and others with tremendous experience. I think military ought to relook that retirement system and increase the years in, and many would stay. They come back to serve in many cases as a way of continuing their patriotic service. But again, I think it's what it is that should be contracted, and it's become clear this kind of security business is not acceptable to the American people, and there's been too many problems with it.
Yeah, I'd rather have Marine guards there taking care of them. Best in the world.
Well, they do a good job.
Yeah. I'm also a little bit worried about the image that we're giving off in a country like Afghanistan, where it's a completely different culture, and here we've got boys gone wild.
Yeah, and you know, there's no sensitivity to the culture. What they do there has a tremendous effect beyond just the act that they have. I mean, it's frat boy behavior to them, but it is significant in its impact to our image over there.
One more military-related question before we
sure.
talk about the book and the boardrooms and leadership styles there. There's a kind of controversy brewing between the Pentagon and the Associated Press today about a photograph that the AP has transmitted to its affiliates showing a mortally wounded 21-year-old Marine in his final moments of life. Bob Gates, the Secretary of Defense, has written a letter to Thomas Curley, the President and CEO of the AP, calling the decision appalling and a breach of common decency because the Marine's father had asked in an interview and in a follow-up phone call that the image, which was taken by an embedded photographer with this group of Marines when they were ambushed, the father had said, please don't publish that. The AP says that they looked at it, and after reflecting it, they decided to make public the image that conveys the grimness of war and the sacrifice of young men and women fighting it. What's your take on this story?
Well, I think it's a horrible decision on the part of the AP to do that. I mean, that's inconsiderate of the family and its effect on them. I mean, certainly there are plenty of images of war we've seen before that I portray its horror. For them to do that in a personal way, violate the wishes of the family, I think violates the agreement under which the embeds agree to participate and the units agree to have them there. And it's going to affect their ability in the future to have that kind of relationship with military units if they do this sort of thing.
Yeah, I would worry about the next AP photographer or reporter who has to go out as an embed and whether there's going to be a trust problem now.
Well, definitely there'll be a trust problem. I mean, they violated a trust, and they violated even more than that. There's an unsaid bond that usually forms between the embeds when they express the heroism, the courage, and what the units go through. But to violate this at this level, and especially since it's a family request, I think that trust will be gone for them.
Yeah. If there weren't the family request, if nobody had known that they were going to do this and they went ahead and published the photo, would that be different?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think you have to use good judgment in this sort of thing. We haven't done this in the past. It's a matter of respect. It's not just a matter of the family's request, although that's important. It's the unit and his buddies, and it's what it says about how we care for those that make the ultimate sacrifice out there and the respect we show. It's a lack of respect in my mind.
It's the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris talking with General Tony Zinni. His new book is called Leading the Charge, Leadership Lessons from the Battlefield to the Boardroom. As a retired four-star Marine general, you now serve on the board of directors of a whole bunch of different companies. How have you been able to take what you did before in your military life and apply that to the corporate world?
Well, I think there's certain things you learn in the military that are applicable. I mean, good leadership and taking care of your people, trying to be as competent as you can. And more importantly, and maybe most importantly, it's bringing a sense of values and ethics and trust. Which now I think the corporate world is beginning to learn is critically important if they're going to succeed. And they, like many other institutions, have had many problems with this. Today's boards require committees on ethics and good governance. And I think military people serve particularly well in those areas, since that's a whole code and culture that our officer corps has had to develop, ever since we created it several hundred years ago.
One of the things that you write about in here is how companies and leaders especially need to adapt to new technology much more quickly than they have in the past. Explain that.
Well, I mean, particularly it's information technology. I mean, we can see the younger generations now have the means to gather information, process it, communicate, and they understand that they grew up with it. For those of us that did not, you have to get a handle on it because it is today's world. It has changed our world greatly. Information moves a lot faster. Decisions have to be made a lot faster. The processes that allow you to analyze it go a lot faster. And so if you can't keep up with technology, you don't have the speed to make the right decisions, and your competition is going to kill you.
In a recession like we have now, are we having a failure of leadership?
I think we are. If you look at the causes of this economic downturn, I think there were things that were done that were clearly unethical and risky. And that risk and that lack of an ethical code really affected the stakeholders in companies and businesses, banks, institutions, and the trust of the American people and the customer. And I think that the root cause of this, we looked at some subprime business and what was done with the lending and the way that was used as an asset base. All those things border not only on illegality, but certainly clearly on unethical and immoral behavior, in my view.
People put their own greed ahead of everything else, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And it became like a fever. It just it was epidemic. It caught on everywhere. Everyone began to do it because the other guy's doing it. And there was a lack of this kind of code that any business, especially the financial institution, should have had within their own industry.
So in the companies where you serve on the board and as one of the leaders of, how do you put a check on that?
I think it begins with the board. I mean, the board is charged with the oversight of the company's behavior, its code of conduct, the way it does business. I mean, the term now is corporate responsibility or corporate social responsibility, and I think board members have to be held accountable to ensure that. You're the governing body by law and by what the stockholders and other stakeholders decide. You have to enforce and ensure that the management and the organization adheres to those codes.
General Tony Zinni, the book is called Leading the Charge, Leadership Lessons from the Battlefield to the Boardroom. Thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Paul. Good to be with you.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.